Hello, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White. I am so glad you're with me today. Today, I think I'm going to start this story backwards because this is a special episode or segment that is part of Keeping It Real on Purpose. I'm your host, Edna White, and I've decided to share my journey backwards to finding myself from unresolved trauma as an adult, and then working on childhood traumas in my mid-30s. So I'm going to share with you each time that we kind of talk to each other, and I'm making it small chunks, so it's not too much to absorb, because it will be, you know, challenging to absorb. It will be hard to accept. And I want you to listen with open ears to see and to understand and reflect on if these things are stopping you in your way. If these issues that I am actually taking part of or being part of or sharing with you are actually being, you know, infiltrating your life and challenging your life. So today's segment is how I found myself. And I shed who I thought I was at age 55. I couldn't believe that at age 55, I finally was doing something that I was meant to do since the age of 5. These days, instead of waking up, you know, worried about getting up, getting into the traffic, moving along, running along into the traffic to work and hustling, bustling with people and fooling around with them and hearing their nonsense and trying to discern what's right and what's wrong and what's truthful and what's a lie, and still being able to survive on the world's most biggest lie of all, a job. And now I wake up in the morning and to know that everything on my to-do list is my own. In the morning, I might have breakfast with my dog here, Cooper, who's actually sleeping. He wakes up to go to sleep, mind you. But I'm doing something that I love to do, and I'm back at it after getting off course. I'm writing again. I'm writing, and I'm loving writing, and I'm enjoying writing. And I also love speaking, but I've always been a people person. I've always been able to, you know, work with people. But I get up in the morning and enjoy what I do when I have my 3 or 4 hours a day with my clients and help them work on their vision where I couldn't work, you know, no one worked with me on my vision. How my day looks, it's whenever I want to get out of the bed. But I really devote most of my time to just like, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the day. And I kind of schedule it out. I have my non-negotiables, which is exercise and meditation. And then I go about my day according to whatever's on my schedule, whether it be meetings to expand my business and talk to people who can help me expand my business as I expand theirs, or going and doing something I want to do, like going to a museum, like going to an event that I want to go to, like hang out with my friend during that time, you know, or just working with my clients on my designated 2 to 3 days a week for only 4 hours. So my day is really like around what I want to do. I do go on, you know, Facebook and do a lot of things like that. But in my all my knowing, I'm just creating all these plans. I feel happy. I feel energized. I feel fulfilled. For the first time since I was very young, like 7 or 8, you know, and I feel fulfilled, you know, and I've always worked for myself from the age of maybe the 30s, early 30s. You know, I had my own real estate office and, you know, well, 2 offices actually. And I've always worked for myself, but these past years, you know, transitioning, I started working for a company at 50. Because I'm 50, and I worked there for about 4 years, and I wasn't happy. You know, I started off, you know how you start off really well, and you get into that move, and oh, this is great, this is going to be life changing. I was in a position where I was able to create the job, because they had no idea what they were looking for, who they were looking for. And I guess I was the person that they needed, but didn't understand how much they needed me. So I was like a glorified real estate agent within their company, within a nonprofit. So I could train, instruct, and I can assist and provide services. And I also did a lot of advocating with legislators and officials on the premise of affordable housing and discriminatory practices, which I loved. It's a shame that in all of that, I really came in this position, not knowing it, but realizing now that I was at the glass ceiling. I couldn't go any higher within this position because, number one, the executive director wasn't allowing it. And number two, there wasn't place or wasn't a budget to go any higher because I was it. You know, I was it. I was the person that could build out a whole unit that would be able to help, you know, their people, but of course they didn't know that. So let me keep this on me. Now I'm finally living happy after getting out off of that job. And what I mean is I got off and my intentions was to stay till 5 years, but it fell short. I stayed on 4 years and it fell short. And the income I was making, you know, helped me, you know, with all my expenses, but also helped me travel all over and do the things I wanted to do. But it was a hard transition for me. So to transition into what I am was purpose to do, which is write and create videos and create, you know, services for people that have been through what I've been through. It took me a long time to circle back to that. And I was just telling somebody about the prophecy that came from Bishop Eugene Anderson of Albany, Georgia, where he now lives, but he used to live in New York. And we went down there in 2007. And I never will forget that day that he told me that, you know, he prophesied and said, out of you will become books and tapes to save the woman. And, you know, I, not that I didn't take it seriously, I left it where it was. It was, if it was on me, it was on me, it's gonna grow. And before I knew it, it started happening, you know, before I knew it. And even that I realized it, that it was happening. Prior to that, I had written at least 4 books and had them formatted and everything, but was afraid to put them out. And this is way before subconsciously I even realized I even did it. And when I went to him, I was like, I didn't even think about that opportunity or that what I had did in the past. But why am I saying all of this? Because I'm back at that point where I am in my purpose right now. And people are afraid of making a career pivot late in life because they think that they put so much work into, for me, like me, being a real estate broker, you know, put so much work into being an advocate in the community, you know. But it's, you know, we worry about all that, but making the pivot and really realizing that it's never too late, I learned to take a few steps back in order to move forward. It's not only okay, but it's also thrilling. It was thrilling for me because I was going through this. I paid someone. Once I left there, it was 2 years in the making, believe this or not. I stepped back and I really took a look at it just recently. I would say in January, I took a look at what I wanted my business to be like, and I began to reassess that I had to pivot. I had to change. I had to look out for my retirement, you know, and what I really wanted to do. And that's how I fell back into my purpose. So for me to start this coaching and consulting business right now, it was already paying off in joy. I mean, the joy that I felt and I do feel was beautiful, you know, or still is beautiful. All the things that I went through in my life, my childhood abuse, and then trying to deal with by making mistakes along the way, coping with, you know, divorce, you know, making a wrong decision of a man, knowing I know the red flags, I see them, and I'm going to say yes anyway, because that's what the norm does, and then I end up with a bad decision, and guess what I end up after that? A lot of shame and regret and aggravation. So my unresolved trauma was showing itself right then and there. On all my choices, and as I look back on all my choices, my unresolved trauma was showing up as an adult. But one thing I gleaned from that was a really beautiful thing, and I don't know how I even started to think about this, but my great-grandmother and my great-grandfather always showed me love. They would pick me up and hold me and hug me. I remember my cousins used to hold me and hug me and take great, painstakingly great care in watching me and taking care of me. My mom had to leave me with my great-grandparents to work up in New York, or to kind of get a place to live up in New York while, you know, I stayed there. But I enjoyed the time with them. I embraced a lot of, you know, beauty of the land, because they were freed slaves and they had their own business as farmers, and they sold at marketplaces. They had their own home. They had acres and acres of land. And not until I was older did I even realize that they were rich. So the love and the beauty that they instilled in me as a child kind of invigorated that gift of writing. And my mom used to always tell me, I don't know how you write this stuff, but I don't know where it comes from, but it's definitely your gift. And I know when I once started to school, English was my thing. Anything with reading and writing, it was aced. Sort of like, as I think about it now, how my great-grandparents gazed down on me and said, you know, shine a light on her, because if I shine a light, she'll grow, and, you know, this gift will grow. And it took a long time for this gift to grow, or maybe it wasn't that the gift is there, it's still there, but I guess through all of the hoopla and the propaganda in the world, it was removed. I moved away from it. I can't help but to get emotional when I think about, you know, all the things that I did go through, you know. And yes, I appreciated my mom for what she could do, you know, and how hard she worked. And I appreciate my brothers and my sister, my brother and my sisters, because they're my champions. I see them, you know, growing now, even now, and even with, you know, with the disability, I see how amazing they really are. They don't really know that were my heroes and why I move when I move. And now that I have adult children, I see them, you know, kind of growing. And, adulting and doing those things, and when I learn something, I share something with them. I share what I learn with them. I don't want to leave them behind, but yet I can still be an example, and I also could share what I've learned. But it's so funny because I laugh because my sons and my daughter, they were well ahead of their time in wisdom, way before me. And I really thank them a lot for a lot of poignant things. And I guess that's what the Bible says, out of the mouth of babes, meaning young children. And those young in the mind, they sometimes give you great things that churn your spirit, you know, and challenge what you really think. But getting back to my 55-year-old breakthrough. It was at my party. I remember that. I was 55, called it Double Nickels. And I did every birthday, except for this last birthday, did I have a theme. And my theme was, where in the world is, like, you know, Carmen Sandiego, Edna White. And I had three places booked. And I'd wait for my friends, you know, tell my friends they're going here. So we'd all kind of rally up and we hang out or whatever. So my last party night, everybody showed up, and it was a great night, really good party. And that's when I realized that my spirit child, as it were, had grown up. And now it was time for me to not worry about a job, but start to painstakingly culminate my career. Not knowing that it's going to take me 2 years to do it. I really wished it would have been sooner, but it really was, you know, a hard thing for me, a hard thing. So 2 years after that, I was approached by a publisher to literally, you know, curate a book, and they would pay me to curate it and pay me royalties on the book sales. So that was one of my first changes in my career that I said, okay, now I see the writing on the wall now. It's the writing on the wall per se, you know. But I was feeling like I was facing putting this all together. And I tell my clients that I'm at this stage, and they call it the bishopship, you know, the bishopship that has forced me to reconsider, revitalize, and reorganize this midlife. You know, I have the ability to drive, you know. I have the ability to network. I have the ability to do all these things. And yet I wasn't doing it because I was leaning on the fact of a job. And I didn't want a job. And job meant nothing but boss. And boss meant nothing but slavery. So I had to change that. And it took me a long time to get out of that frame of mind. Like, it's not easy getting out of an enslaved mindset. It's not easy. It's not easy saying no. It's not easy turning people down. It's not easy telling people truth. It's not easy telling your truth. But it's important. It was important to me as a person and me as the business. Well, needless to say, fast forward, I am now in that area, in that vein where I accomplished what I set out to do. I set out to go deep, do the work, because imposter syndrome had invaded my life and I didn't even know it. In those 2 years, the reason why it took me so long to figure this out is because I felt like an imposter. The whole time. And I'm talking about imposter syndrome, but I really had to do the digging. I was swimming in shame, swimming in embarrassment, swimming in imposter syndrome. Well, needless to say, I'm past that now, so I'm post-imposter. I'm not there anymore. I'm no longer there. But I needed to bring myself to the table of my accomplishments and being proud of them. What I was doing was allowing social media to regulate who I was, because I didn't want people to, if I did too much, people say, oh, great for one thing, but all this other stuff, come on, really, please? And I was started to let that bother me. And then I had to think, what if I didn't have imposter syndrome? I mean, what if I didn't have social media? I still would be proud. I still would be celebrating myself. I would still be successful. I would still be contributing to my success and or luck. So I had to bring myself to celebrate it. I had to bring myself to the point of being looking people in the eye and not flinching, being utterly confident, being unstoppable. I had spent too much time in my life feeling not smart enough and feeling not assimilated enough. I remember doing some yoga, and I could get almost every other pose, every, you know, pose that I was working on, not all those crazy ones you may see now, but the poses I was working on, every one of them I would seamlessly get, except for the one with the root chakra, where I'd have to stand in the tree pose and put my foot on one foot and put the other foot against the, in a triangle, against the leg while standing. And my leg would always shake. And I, you know, that's a sign of your root chakra not being secure, not feeling safe, you know, not, you know, knowing where your roots are, what you know, where you stand in life. And I didn't feel secure. And when I used to do that pose, I was sure that I wasn't going to accomplish it. Now I do. And I learned to take it step by step. Instead of doing, you know, a hold for 10 seconds, I do it for 5 seconds. And now my mantra is different for that. in my head, I'm no longer masked. I'm no more playing the game. This is who I am. If I blunder and make a mistake and I'm not perfect with my speech, I no longer care because it's part of me. In all those 2 years, until up to now, I am making less money than I used to. But my new work has opened up a front row to creativity for more rewards than I could possibly explain to you today. And it also has, from the day-to-day stresses, I don't have those. The headaches of the business running me, I don't have that. I used to, you know, scream about the setbacks, like a catastrophe. Now I learn how to solve the problem. I sleep at night. And sometimes if I don't sleep at night, it's not stressful. I can take a nap during the day. But I'm okay. I feel great. The main thing I had to let go of was the worry about failure. Failure is just the sign that you tried, it didn't work for you, and move on. I now know I can handle it. I know now that I can handle anything that life throws at me. I know that. So finding myself, you know, sounds like an inherent self-centered goal, but it's actually an unselfish process that is at the root of everything we do in life. Finding ourselves is not doing what everybody else is doing, not wearing what everybody else is wearing the way they wear it. It's doing things that make you feel good, that add to your life instead of take away from your life. You know, we first have to know who we are, what we value, and in effect, what we have to offer. This personal journey is one every individual will benefit from taking. It's just the process that you have to break down. You have to shed layers that do not serve us in our lives and don't reflect who we really are. It really involved for me a tremendous act of building up, recognizing who I wanted to be and being passionate about going about fulfilling my unique destiny, whatever that may be. And the same thing goes for you. It isn't something to fear or avoid. Berating yourself along the way, can't do it. But rather something to seek out with the curiosity and compassion on yourself. Just like we would if we had a client, we give them compassion. We don't give ourselves enough compassion. And we give compassion to our friends, our mother, our siblings, our children. But we never give it to ourselves. Give that compassion to yourself. So here, you know, I'm going to wrap it up. These are some things that I took away from my journey in finding myself at 55. Number one, make sense of your past. Don't just gloss over it. Don't just be coherent. Don't dismiss it. Don't jive it up with these expletive words. Just make sense of it. In order to uncover who we are and why we act the way we do, We have to know our own story. And that takes being brave and willing to explore our past as an important stepping stone on the road of understanding ourselves and becoming who we want to be. You ever realize or recognize or even see in your own journey, things just don't seem to go right? Some say it's because you're not supposed to be there. But I say it's because you're not being your true self when you step in that way. And it doesn't work out because it knows that you're acting and pretending. Here's what unresolved trauma does. Your unresolved trauma shows everyone around you and through history the way we act today and in this moment. If you look at the way people hurt other people, it's unresolved trauma. It's all it is. It was never taken care of, never confronted, but it was that narrative, or like Dexter says, that dark passenger, because all of us have one. We just got to know who's driving. And don't misconcept it. Just because you religiously you receive God or however we all don't receive him. He's been in us for years, so that's another subject but for another day. But, we get this new humanistic view on life. That dark passenger is always there. So we have to be ever so mindful, ever so conscious. Because the decisions in our present, they represent our true selves. Our attitudes and the atmosphere we grew up in has a heavy hand in how we act as adults. To differentiate. Now, what does that mean? It means the process of striving to develop a sense of ourselves as an independent individual, not part of a collective. My personal experience through that was right after my car accident, about a year later, I went to go speak at a church, and I came through the back door, and I was getting up into the pulpit, and I looked back at the people, and I saw that all of them had the same color shirt on, same hairdo, same skirt, relatively same shoes, and they all had the same facial structure, like they were just sitting there like zombies. And I'm not gonna say it was God, but I want to say my personal human self or my innate preacher said to me, "Do you want to be like that?" And I literally got up and left without speaking. I wasn't an independent individual. I wasn't. You have to be independent individual. In order to find ourselves and fulfill our unique destinies, we must differentiate from destructive, interpersonal, familial, and societal influences that don't serve us. I had to. In order to lead a free life, a person must separate him or herself from negative imprints and remain open and vulnerable. Now, if you black women and us black women are listening today, we are taught not to be vulnerable. And that causes us so much pain, so much agony throughout life. So that's one thing we have to work on, is that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with all of this? It's really taking on the work that you have to do. It's a struggle. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But break away from those harmful internalized thought processes. You know, the thoughts that we had, the hostile thoughts that we have against other people, you know, genres, races, sexes, creeds, all of that stuff really weighs on our attitude. And it makes us have these hostile attitudes and these critical attitudes against ourselves and others. So what's in your mind, you don't have to tell us what's in your mind. It comes right out of your mouth, how you treat others. Separate from negative personality traits assimilated from your parents. So what I mean by that is separate, you know, get rid of that stuff that doesn't serve you. Like personality traits like, I can tell you a perfect one. I just forgot it that quick, but I could tell you it's passive aggressive. Aggressive or passive, you know, fawning, fight and flight, those things, all those things, you assimilated them, those from your parents. Sarcasm. Overly, everything's funny. Overly thinking everything's funny. Ha ha ha, everything's funny. Everything's a joke. Those are assimilated from your parents. Or everything's too serious. Everything's religious. Assimilated from your parents. Relinquish patterns of defense formed. So when you're talking about something that's hard to talk about, you start getting defensive. When you are confronted with something that you've never heard of before, you get defensive. When you hear something that you already know, you get defensive. Yeah, I know it. When you are in a room full of people that you think may know more than you, you lie that you do know as much as they do. Things like that. Get rid of that. Relinquish those patterns. I told you it's going to be a lot of work. And the last step, develop your own values, your ideals, your beliefs, rather than automatically accepting those that you grew up with. I did for 29 years. I automatically just accepted them, even though I was questioning religiosity and the forms of religiousness. I questioned it, but I stayed. And it did me no good. At the end of it, there was nothing that changed. Only thing that changed was the day. When things changed is when I put the work in. When things changed is when I believed that it was going to happen. When things changed, I expected it to change. And only for the good, when my ego was proper and when my intent was right. So, this is day one. This is day one. How I found myself and shed who I thought I should have been at age 55. Hope this is helpful. As you all know, I am a life coach. I help women of color who are looking to start a business, but have made some bad decisions along the way, or are in business or in a career that want to transition out of that career and be able to make that their consulting business or their coaching business or their entrepreneurial journey. I'm the one you speak to. That can get your mindset right, that can set you up in business, and I also can help you network your way to profit. Hope to talk to you soon. And look, if you have any comments, remember you can press the button to leave me a message, and I'll be glad to answer it for you. Hope to see you real soon. Bye for now.